Hi, thanks for listening to the It's Not Just One Thing podcast series from Physio My Dog. I'm Harriet Kitkat and I'm from Physio My Dog. I'm a vet physiotherapist specialising in dogs, but I'm also a dog owner myself, and I'm also incredibly nosy and interested in knowing more and more about what we can do as dog owners, but also as therapists as to what we can do to help dogs. So I hope you find this series useful. So in this part two, let's talk a little bit more about the classical conditioning that you were just finishing off with part one. And then you can maybe give us some examples of how owners can introduce some of this stuff around the home. So there's they don't necessarily have to suddenly go out, rush out and find a behaviorist, but some kind of like easy things that they can start to do. Yeah, you were just about to make a speech at a wedding when we last spoke.
Okay, so you just start and then I'll just flow with it. That's fine.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about the classical conditioning then. So I'm thinking, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking clicker training. Yeah. Is that like an example of something like clicker? So talk us through a bit about that.
So yeah, clicker training is great. So basically the classical conditioning, also known as, there's other words for it, which is kind of, Pavlovian response, Pavlovian conditioning, or respondent conditioning as well. So maybe termed differently depending on where you look for it or kind of what publications you find it in. But basically, trying not to go too kind of really kind of in-depth with stuff, but you've basically got the clicker, which has no association whatsoever in the early stages. So it doesn't have a good association, but nor does it have a bad association. What we want to do through classical conditioning is we want to make the clicker a positive association, because we want the dogs to understand that every time they've heard the click, something good is going to happen. And therefore, every time they've heard the click, it's because they've done something that we're really happy with.
Okay, so going back to what we were talking about in part one about the lovely quadrant. So using clicker training would be the way that you would start to encourage more positive reinforcement behavior.
Yeah, definitely. Right? Because if the dog's striving for the click and trying to offer behaviors to hear the click, which therefore tells them they've hit the jackpot, and then it therefore tells them that the food is going to arrive or the good stuff is going to arrive immediately afterwards, then they go out kind of working on what to do and what to offer in order to get that food or to get that reward.
Okay. So what's... can you give us like just a couple of examples and how, so someone buys a clicker and it's like, well, now what the hell do I do now?
Yeah, good. Okay. So I'll talk through one of the pitfalls first, because this is one that most people get to kind of, it unravels quite quickly. So basically they use the clicker as an attention getting device. All right. So they use it to try and catch the dog's attention, and it might work for a little while and then the dog goes, there's nothing, you know, it's just another sound, it's boring, it doesn't matter. So when you first get your click, you need to have a nice handful of smelly treats or something, you know, something interesting that the dog likes. And you are going to pair the sound of the clicker to something fun or something interesting or something that the dog wants, which is usually food in the early stages. So for the clicker training, and for people who are listening, I would always recommend, if you're using a clicker, some of the clickers can be quite loud. And if you're putting it right next to the dog's face, it can cause an issue where the dogs are actually startled by the sound of the click because it's too close to them. So my advice would always be wrap it in a small towel or put it in your pocket. Basically anything that you can do just to muffle the sound slightly, because you can still make the association even with a muffled sound. So all you're going to do is you're going to press the click and then you're going to hand the dog a treat. Click, treat, click, treat. The dog could be stirred.
So they're not. So the dog doesn't matter.
No, not at all. And this is where it kind of, it's on a kind of a subconscious.
Not pulling on the lead though. Maybe not pulling on the lead.
Practice it at home. Lead off, collar off. Have the dog completely relaxed. And if you've got food in your hand, the likelihood is they'll be interested in what you're doing. So they'll be kind of close by. So yeah, sit, stand, down, anything calm basically, and you just go ahead and click treat, click treat, click treat, and you might run through a handful of treats, which is kind of 10 or 15 treats. And then that's it. You put the clicker away, half an hour or an hour later, you bring the clicker back out and you repeat that. And it's just then repeat exposure at that level to teach the dog that every time the click happens, something good is going to arrive. And that's the association that is made exactly the way that we were talking about it in the last part, which is going back to the kind of the sound of metal on a glass. You then associate that with a speech. So our dogs are now going to hear that click and associate that with something good arriving, which is food. You know, simply pairing those things together until eventually the clicker becomes what we call a conditioned stimulus. So it's the point at which the dog hears the click and immediately knows what's going to come next, even if the food isn't present.
Yeah.
Because the repetition that you've done so far, click, treat, click, treat, click, treat, you could then click and the dog will go, oh, treat, even if the treat's not in your hand, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so again, going back to the example of, say, the dog pulling on the lead, which, again, is so common. So I don't know whether this is right, so you can tell me off if I haven't been doing this right. So with Baxter, Baxter is our dog, he's a rescue, and he's so much better now at loosely walking, but he will pull if he's on a harness, leading harness. So if he's pulling, I try, you know, because it's difficult, isn't it? You've got a clicker in your hand, you've got treats, you've got your lead, you know, and if there's only one of you there, you're trying to look out for triggers and everything around you. So if he's pulling, and then I know, to use the positive reinforcement, we obviously don't want him to pull. So we want to reward him. So I'm just thinking this out loud, by the way.
Great,
so
no, go
sorry
for
if I've got it wrong. So we want him, I don't want him to pull. So if he's just pulling, and I don't want him to pull, then I would say stop, because I don't want him to pull anymore. So I will not walk. So I want him to release the tension on the lead, as opposed to me like pulling back. Because I guess that's what quite often people do, isn't it? They just keep pulling the dog back, which obviously that's not the dog making the choice.
Exactly,
that's the human doing that. So we would want, so if he then releases the tension on the lead, if I then click when he's released, because I'm then, but I wouldn't necessarily have to give him a treat, because his reward is the fact that he can carry on walking. Is that right? If I kind of said that in the right sequence?
Yeah, you're pretty much there with that. I would still always reward with the clicker though. Because you want to make sure that clicker is as highly charged as it can be. So basically the rule of thumb is if you've clicked, you always treat, because you always want to make sure that the dog is rewarded when they hear the click, because you want to make sure the strength of that sound is as polished as it can be. But if you weren't using the clicker, then the reward would be access to the next part of the walk, which is what you were talking about there.
Okay. Yeah. So again, just to summarize that, so people can understand clearly. So say they don't want to bother with a clicker, because they're just thinking, I just can't kind of cope with that. So if they're pulling on the lead, they stop. Again, I don't want it to kind of go down the rabbit hole of loosely walking, because I know that's a whole other behavior, but just under the umbrella of the positive reinforcement, all that type of stuff. So so the dog's pulling, the owner stops.
So my tips for loose lead work is I always try and encourage the dog back to you first. So I would use like a click of your tongue or a whistle or a smooching sound. Basically what we're looking for is something that prompts the behavior rather than just tells the dog what to do. So if I get to the stage where the dog's pulled forward and I've stopped and the lead starts to tense up, a little kind of click like a or a smooching sound would often start to encourage the dog back to me. Then I can either use a clicker at that point and reward and carry on with the walk, or I would hold the dog next to us as much as I could. So I would kind of talk to the dog and I'd say, oh, that's really good, well done. And I'd walk a few more steps. And then as the dog lines up and walks with us, then I'd click and treat at that point.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because it's so much. I mean, that's one of the other questions I was going to ask you is like, and again, I speak as a dog owner here when I'm sort of saying all this. It's like there's so many things. Yeah. And again, I know we will definitely do other podcasts on reactivity and all that kind of stuff, because that's there's a whole other thing. But, you know, if you do have a dog that has, you know, a sort of behavior that you don't necessarily want, as a human, you have to think about so much, don't you? Because obviously you have to think about the environment. You have to be looking around to see who's coming, or, you know, bikes, or depending on what potentially can set your dog off. there are so many different things to have to think about. Then you've got like the coordination of like, oh God, when am I meant to click? When am I meant to give a treat? When am I meant to put my hand in my pocket? All that kind of stuff. So how do you kind of like, what's some sort of general kind of overall guidance, I guess, about how owners can have, you know, this, I guess, setting expectations really as to how, what they can expect.
Yeah, sure. So what I would always say is try and add in as little as possible. So if you're struggling with having the lead, the click, the dog, the technique and treats and all that, is do away with whatever you really don't need. And for this part of the sequence, you really don't need the clicker because you can use a verbal marker, which acts exactly the same as a clicker. Mm. It's just a word, and I use yes. There's people who use different words, but I use yes. And it means the same as the clicker. It's trained the same way as the clicker. The only benefit is I don't need to hold a clicker at that point. So I've got then a free hand. But, you know, we've had people who love clicker training. And so what we've advised is just to stick or sellotape the clicker to the lead so that they can hold the lead. And then wherever the thumb lands on the lead, they can click the lead and they don't have to hold the lead separately. You've got other bits, or you've got other people who can walk out and click and treat. So there's variations of that. But a verbal marker is just as important as a clicker. And it depends what I'm doing, depending on what I use. So if I haven't got a clicker handy or I forgot it or whatever, then I'll use a yes marker. If I need something very precise, such as kind of trick training or shaping or anything like that, then I will use the clicker because that's just a slightly more accurate way of rewarding this specific behavior that I need.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, I would just say it's such a fascinating kind of subject, isn't it? Because it's just, I guess when people do have dogs, and there's lots of different reasons, again, which is another topic for another podcast, but there's so many different reasons why dogs are reactive or are having some of these unwanted behaviors and stuff. And it's, I guess, you know, trying to stay positive as in happy positive, as opposed to some of the positive reinforcement type stuff. But it's like, you know, you can get results, but it there isn't a really a quick fix with some of this stuff. And so why do you, because it's hard. I mean, so we've had Baxter like 2 and a bit years now, and, you know, I would love to be able to walk him down the road, you know, to take it, but he's just not that kind of dog, you know, he's just not there yet. There's still lots. I mean, again, I know a lot of it is training the owner, isn't it? But so again, so setting expectations for people, two things really, why should they want to do this, and what can they kind of expect from it other than them going, I haven't got time for this. I'm just going to go out and buy a collar that's maybe not very nice for them to not pull on the lead anymore. So give us some of the reasons as to why they should do it.
Yeah, stay great. With it. So, I mean, if you're trying to get a quick fix, some of the trainers who use quick fix methods are ones who will suppress behaviours. And the issue with suppressing a behaviour by telling the dog off when they've done something wrong is that you never really deal with the root cause of the behaviour. On top of that, the dogs are doing something because they feel it's the correct thing to do. So it's their outlet for whatever is going on under the surface. So if you squash that part of the behavior, all you're really likely to find is that you will see that behavior pop up, or you'll see that drive pop up in other areas. So, you know, a dog who barks and gets told off all the time might start becoming more destructive around the house. This is the thing, is that you can suppress behaviors all day long, but you're putting the animal under a huge amount of stress and unnecessary stress. This is really kind of important as well. You're putting the dog through that unnecessary stress just to get a quick win, which actually doesn't solve the problem. It just means you have to then keep a lid on it. And by keeping a lid on it, it just means you have to keep telling the dog off all the time. So it never really gets to that point where the dog is happy and the dog is relaxed, which as owners, we brought these dogs into our homes. We love them. We care for them. They're family members. So you want the dog to be happy. You don't want to have that dog worried or cautious of you or its environment. You don't want to really have a dog living in fear. So going the opposite way and starting to work on it on a more emotional level and starting to build the dog up, it does take a lot longer, but it's a much nicer process. Yes, there's stressful times, definitely. When you're out on walks and something doesn't quite go to plan and the behaviors start to kind of creep back through and then you go back through your training plan. So yeah, there's lots of, you know, it's certainly not an easy process on some occasions, but you are much more, what's the best word really? You're much more empathetic or at least sympathetic to the dog's needs at that point, and you are helping them out from a much more holistic and kind of rounded point of view. And that's where that bond and that trust and that kind of that strengthened relationship comes from as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I say. I've learned so, I always say animals are great, not just dogs, but animals definitely are greatest teachers, aren't they? And they teach us so much. And, you know, it's like they don't care about so many things. All they want to, you know, they've got their needs really are quite basic a lot of the time, aren't they? And yet us blooming humans overcomplicate everything, put all our emotions into it. And with the work that I've done with you and Caris, who I'm going to be speaking about on other topics, who's another behaviorist, and Joe and all the rest of it, it's like, one thing that I've really noticed is that it's not just I think it's harder to train the owners than it is to train the dogs.
Yeah, I'd say it's about 50-50. When I was at uni, we did a module on counselling. And at the time, I was like, this is rubbish. I don't want to be doing counselling. I want to be working with dogs. I want to be helping out. I want to be problem solving. And actually, it's probably one of the most used modules from uni that I use now, even up to date. Behavioral work and behavioral science with dogs has improved massively, and it's kind of progressed. But the fundamental skills of being able to talk to a client, get on board, and get them on board as well, and put them at ease. Those counselling skills that I learned at uni I use them all the time, and they're extremely useful. So yeah, I'm kind of glad we did that. And 50-50 is probably what I would say, is that, you know, 50% of the work is getting it through to the owners, because they need to then pass it down to the dog when you've gone. And you might, you know, we might only spend an hour a week with that client, or one hour every 2 weeks. So it's really important that the owner is at ease and they know what the jobs are, and we've made those jobs fairly simple. And not to say that, you know, it's because we think they're simple. It's just that making it simple means it's easy to administer, and you can sneak in 3 minutes at a time when you're doing your training. So if you're waiting for the kettle to boil, there's your training time set aside perfectly. Or if the adverts come on and the dogs are up and about doing something. And again, perfect. 2 or 3 minutes of training that you can blend in with your everyday life is perfect. And that's kind of where your counselling stuff comes in from, is what can the owners achieve? How much time commitments have they actually got? What are their skill levels at the moment? And trying to match everything and kind of coach them through so that they're happy and also the dogs are happy as well.
Yeah, so summarizing that. So basically, from a theory perspective, we want, going back to say the quadrant that we went through with all the different examples. So really, we want to always be kind of focusing more on the positive reinforcement. So kind of rewarding the dog for the behavior that they, you know, the behavior that we want. So that's kind of what we really want to be doing, and we want to be avoiding the positive punishment side of things, which says either kind of like hitting a dog or doing the noises. Yeah.
and it's interesting, or it's important to mention that positive isn't permissive. So it's not a case of the dogs can just act up and then we just wait for the stuff that we want. What we can do is we can get in there a little bit earlier and steer the dog in the correct action. So if you're seeing an unwanted problem, the take home, if you listen to nothing else at this up to now, for people who are listening, is that the take home is to think about what you want the dogs to do and train that, rather than the dog's doing this, how do I stop it? So try and get out of the mindset of I need you to stop my dog doing this, and get into the mindset of going, I would like my dog to do this. And if you're dealing with another behaviorist or another trainer, they can go, perfect, I can help you with that, no problem.
Train what we want. And so is that, so again, you kind of hit, again, you hear sometimes because like, I want them to know I'm the alpha male. So I guess so what's your kind of response to that? Is that a thing, the whole alpha
style? It's not a thing. It was coined I'm not sure if it was how long ago it was now, but basically the guy, what's his first name? Mac. He coined the kind of the alpha dog years back. He actually revisited his research 10 years down the line and admitted that actually he'd made a mistake and that it wasn't, and because they were working on captive wolves at the time, which were completely different to wild wolves. And so the research was quite biased as it was. And as he went back, he went, actually, this was flawed from the outset. The problem was that it had picked up so much momentum by then that it's now just commonplace to speak about alpha and kind of alpha dogs.
Yeah, so the humans don't have to, because I think it's like you say, there's been so much of it banned about, so humans don't have to say, look,
no,
I'm boss.
It's not that kind of relationship that you need with your dog. What you need is a partnership. That's how I always work on it. So you want to be a partnership with the dog, and you know, there's certain responsibilities that you have to the dog and there's certain responsibilities that the dog will have to you. And it's that team building and mutual trust and mutual respect for each other that you have, and certainly respect for the dog. It's really important that we actually respect the dog and respect the dog's needs. And it's getting that relationship just right. Which can take a while, but once you've got it, you know, it's a much more harmonious kind of life to have with the dog then.
Relationship. I know, it's just, well, as I say, it's fascinating. Honestly, I could talk about this or I could bombard you with questions all evening, because I just think as soon as I get an answer from you, it just sparks off so many different questions in my head. So I don't want to go down too many rabbit holes. And it's a really good excuse to be able to get you to come back and talk to us about
more than happy
other
to do
things.
That.
And so I'm imagining, I'm sure that lots of people are going to have questions or what have you. So if anyone does have questions, so Adam, tell us a little bit. Just tell me very, very quickly whereabouts in the world you are based. So if people want to get in touch with you, how best do they get in touch with you? And what area, what geographically, which area?
Great stuff. So I predominantly cover Bath, which southwest, so Bath and kind of very limited surrounding areas for in-person sessions, but we do have a very good system and kind of backup system with helping people remotely from all over the country. We've actually got a couple of overseas clients as well, so European clients who are working with online to help out remotely as well. So any of the details that people need can be found on our website, which is avondogservices.co.uk. We've also got a Facebook page where we put little bits of information, as we do on our Instagram account, which is also Avon Dog Services. And then finally, we have a YouTube page, which we're just getting a bit of momentum building a bit of momentum on. So that's going to have more tutorials and more videos to just watch and observe and just kind of get a bit of information from as well.
Fab. So people can get in touch if they've got questions, and say if people for any reason can't find Adam, I'm sure they will, but they can always message me and I can connect you two guys, you know, to connect people together. And I just think, the biggest takeaway thing is, like you say, is kind of making sure that we're training the behavior we want and really kind of try and stay the course. It's like, this stuff works. There's the science, there's the proof. And again, another podcast we can talk about different case studies and stuff, because I know you've got loads of different stories and what have you, but it's like, stick with it, guys, because it does work. And I have to remind myself of that as well, as I say, and own it to Baxter. It's like, I've just got to keep plugging away. I've got to remind myself to do it every day, because say life can get in the way sometimes, and it's just like, oh blimey, where's the clicker, where are the treats, you know, that kind of stuff. It's really stick with
and a quick kind of note on what you've just mentioned there is that don't be afraid to take a day off as well. So if you find that you've had a long day at work, if you want to do training, great, but if you're not in the right mood, or you just think, oh, do you know what, I've just had a gut full of what's happened today, don't do any training, just do a bit of play. Just do some interactions with the dogs, give them some scent work games, or just a game of tug or a fetch or something like that. Obviously not too much fetch, because I know that's not good. But just,
done.
Just something, just to still interact with the dog, but look much more informal than just training. So you're still connecting, you're still hanging out with the dog, you're still having a bit of fun with them, but you're just not putting them in a training mindset where, and you're not putting yourself in a training position where you're not necessarily 100% on it.
Yeah, we want to be in a positive reinforcement mindset
definitely.
Doing it.
Definitely. And if you see, like you mentioned, if you've gone out on a walk and it's been a not so good walk, and you've maybe come across distractions or triggers that have that the dogs have reacted to, you know, as much as you try and keep a positive outcome or positive mindset, it can definitely affect your kind of mental well-being as well. So again, just come home, and then the rest of that day or the next day, just do fun stuff. Don't worry about going back to your training. Just do stuff that you know the dog is good at, and that you know you're good at being able to do with the dog as well, and just have fun. And that'll help to put you in a much better mindset for the day after, or whenever you go back to your training at that point.
Yeah, and if all else fails,
it's
booze.
Oh, yes.
To the human, not the dog.
A little Prosecco or a little bit of dog beer, that would be absolutely fine for them, yeah. You can make a night of it. You and the dog can go out.
Yeah, exactly. Go out lodging it. Oh, dear.
My pleasure.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Adam. I do appreciate it. I know we could go on and on and on, but hopefully this has given people some food for thought. As I say, if you've never tried this kind of way, then please give it a go. You know, there's loads of stuff on YouTube and all the rest of it, and so you'll reach out to people like Adam, or Adam, if you're not in Adam's like area, so you can either do online stuff, or I'm sure Adam can point you in the right direction. So as I say, stick with it, because it does work. Cool.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Adam.
Speak to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the It's Not Just One Thing That Will Help Your Dog podcast. I really hope you've enjoyed it and found it useful. If you'd like any more information about anything that we've been discussing, please contact me. You can find my website by googling Physio My Dog. You can also look me up on Facebook and Instagram under the same name, Physio My Dog. I look forward to hearing from you.